on the road or off-road, Chevy Silverado is built for tough performance in any condition. Hit the road in a new Silverado pickup. Go to ChevyDriveChicago.com for a dealer near you. Chevy Silverado, official truck partner of the Chicago Bears.
All righty. Thank you, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch, and welcome to the Thursday edition. Coming up a little bit later this half hour, Bill Geiger will be here to talk about your retirement savings. Elise Glink, after the break, will talk about marketing and about geographical marketing. She's gonna school me a little bit about how you learn about the grocery store around the corner from your cell phone and how businesses can use that. But we're starting with Dennis Rodkin, who writes for Crane Chicago Business about real estate. Dennis, welcome back to the Business Lunch.
Hi, Steve.
I want to talk. Well, let's do a couple things. First of all, you wrote a story about the house flipping in Chicago. And let me just find the numbers here. 5,351 Chicago area homes were flipped last year. Up 33% from 2014, and the most since 2006.
Yeah, the most since a very busy time. The house flipping was huge, as a lot of people remember, during the housing boom.
Right.
You know, there were a lot of, like, there were a lot of North Shore people putting investment money into
people
buying.
Were doing it for fun.
Yeah, exactly. And there is an element of that still, but it's a slightly more sophisticated business now. I think there are people with a real business model. They're buying up, in for the most part, foreclosures, things like that, fixing them up. But last year, flippers were busy. 2015, flippers were busier than at any time since 2006 in
and
Chicago.
So does that tell us anything?
It tells us a couple of things. First of all, we still have a smaller percentage of sales as flips than the national figure, so we're good. I talked to a guy who studies flipping, a guy from Realty Track who studies this data, and he said we're actually nice and cautious. We've got a lot of it going on, but we don't have the crazy stuff going on. He was referring to cities in Texas and Salt Lake City where flippers buy houses for more than their market value, put some money into them, and expect to sell them at an even higher price because prices are going up so fast. Yeah, the data shows that ours are being much more cautious,
so
which
we,
is good.
Well, I think I read the national average is 5.4%.
Yeah.
And we were at
4.5.
Okay.
Right.
Well, what I like about it, too, the story you point out is that even though it's not a lot, it represents you're dressing up the neighborhood.
Yeah.
And so you're speaking sort of to future sales and future real estate values as well.
Yeah, improving places, like some of the examples I was looking at were in Rogers Park, in Forest Park. There are some people doing it in Auburn, Gresham, and a few other neighborhoods where these are houses that they may have been foreclosed years ago and sat empty and look awful, or they may have had very long-term owners who didn't have, who ran out of the energy to keep the house up, that sort of thing. So the houses need improvement.
Right.
Most buyers today, most end users, homeowners, aren't going to buy a house and fix it up. That's just not where we are these days. So the flippers are, I mean, I hate to say it this way, but they're doing us a favor. Right?
Well, I suppose that's one side of it. The other side of it is people say, well, here's the gentrification that's going to push people out too. Is it that, or is it abandoned homes in individual neighborhoods?
Well, I don't know that this would necessarily be a piece of gentrification, partly because the rapidly gentrifying neighborhoods, the prices are moving a lot faster than flippers can go for. And also, a lot of these purchases are still the distressed properties, which are not in the Humboldt Parks and the places where Logan Square is, where we're looking at the most pushback against gentrification. They're in the, as I said, Rogers Park, Forest Park, Auburn, Gresham.
All right, let me walk you through this then, another story. Governor Rauner doesn't like Senate President Cullerton.
Uh-huh.
Mayor Emanuel doesn't like Governor Rauner. And we're not sure that Michael Madigan likes anyone.
Yeah.
What does that do for home sales in the area? Does that have an impact?
It does. I absolutely think that it does. I think our market, and experts have said to me that our market is bogged down a little bit by the fact that, by not only that, we've got governmental paralysis, no question. We have a slower job market than most regions. There have been a lot of jobs pulled into the merchandise mart and downtown in the past year, but in general, our job growth is anemic compared to most other states in the region. We're expected to lose jobs in total in 2016.
Well, you know, can I just interrupt you to say, we our sort of standards are so weird in this state because of the way we're fighting and where we are. Weak job growth, you write. Illinois lost jobs last year. The only state that touches the Great Lakes that didn't gain jobs.
Yeah.
We're the only state, and we lost jobs. And I don't know, are we even talking about, I guess we're talking about it in a bigger sort of sense, but not in a concrete, you know, this is what happened last year sense.
Well, yeah, you know, I'm not sure what you mean exactly, but
I'm not sure either, but I guess it's the sort of thing that might overwhelm an administration, but it's really not overwhelming Governor Rauner, because I guess he's talking about 10 years or 15 days,
right.
Or maybe it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. I don't know.
But I, as a home seller, am troubled by it. As a fictitious home seller.
How much are you asking, Dennis?
I'm troubled because, you know, as we lose jobs, we lose demand for housing.
Right.
As people leave to the Texases and Arizonas and Californias, where jobs are growing, they leave a house for sale. So our demand and supply situation is affected by our weak job growth. All of our problems, you talked about the Mexican standoff between the three pieces of government, that is very likely, we all know our pension obligation is likely to result in tax increases.
Right, right.
So that too affects my ability to sell my house.
Unless Donald Trump wins and builds a wall around that Mexican standoff.
Yeah, unless he builds a wall, we build a wall around Illinois
them.
And we don't let you leave.
Dennis Rodkin writes about our houses, but he also writes about their houses. And tell me about one of their houses. The heir to the Amway family is building in River North.
The billionaire DeVos family from Grand Rapids, Michigan. I've written about some real estate transactions of theirs in Chicago. They bought a piece of the Cubs. So, you know, they have a footprint here. But they just received permits on March 1st to build a 13,000 square foot house in River North. The land and construction combined look like they'll cost about $12.7 million.
Wow.
Yeah. $12.7 million for a house in River North.
Do they know they tore down Ed DeBevics? Because
you know, maybe they might need to rethink their plans.
Talk about hurting property values.
That neighborhood is insane. There have been, it's River North, right? So you're building without a view of the lake. In this particular site, you're building without a whole lot of skyline view either. You're chock-a-block houses.
It's not too neighborhood-y yet, is it?
I think people who live there probably do think it's neighborhood-y because I guess it would be about four square blocks on Superior and Huron, which were surface parking lots for Montgomery Ward. They're full of houses. There have been, I'm thinking three, but possibly four sales over $4 million in that neighborhood. There are quite a few very nice houses. There's nothing at $12 million. The highest I know of is $4.7 million. But I think they feel that it's, you know, you've got the restaurants nearby, you don't have Ed DeBevics, but you've got the nice views of the, as you walk west of the North Branch, there's shopping, things like that.
Oh, yeah.
But you're in it's essentially a brand new neighborhood.
I grew up in a small town, and when people would build a house in the small town, you know, and they weren't there, you'd walk around, check out the footprint. So maybe when they're not there, we can walk around River North and check out this house.
Yeah, let's pop over there.
Dennis Rodkin writes for Crane Chicago. So more of these stories can be seen at chicagobusiness.com, right? That's the website?
chicagobusiness.com.
Thanks for coming in. We'll see you in a couple weeks.
Thanks, Steve.
Well, 12:22, you're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. Bill Geiger of Geiger Wealth Management is in the studio this afternoon. Bill, welcome back to the Business Lunch.
Good to be here, Steve.
All right, so we tend to talk about retirement issues when you're here. And what are we doing on Wall Street now? The Dow is down 18 points, NASDAQ down 12. Oil is down today just a penny, so oil seems to have been coming back a bit, but there are a lot of people who say that we could be in for some rough economic times this year. I think probably more so in Europe and around the world than in the U.S.
The U.S. is there too. I believe that not only the world, but the U.S. is already in a recession. Recessions, you don't know you're in them until you have two down quarters of GDP.
Right.
And you don't see that until two quarters later. But everything is pointing in that direction. One of the big barometers is oil. The reason that the price of oil is down is not because Saudi Arabia is making more of it. The reason oil is down is because people aren't using it. Economies aren't using it all over the world, including the United States. the demand for oil is down because the economy is slowing down, and that means a recession.
Isn't it down also, though, because we're finding alternative sources of fuel? And
yeah, but the numbers don't work out that well.
Yeah.
The big move that we've seen from over $100 a barrel down into the 30s is because the entire world is slowing down. And that, unfortunately, is a big worry for our economy, and more importantly, from where I'm sitting, from what we do, helping people prepare for retirement, is that if you're 5 years out from retirement and we go into another big recession again, you're going to go through a really, really tough spot coming up.
Right, because we're about to get a little more rocky?
Well, yeah. I sat down with a couple yesterday. They're 60 years old. They've got a portfolio that's $1.2 million. And the husband said to me, he says, Bill, he says, I'm scared to death that my $1.2 million is going to go down to $600,000. Now, there may be people out listening to my voice that say, are thinking, poor guy. But if you're close to retirement and what you've worked and saved for your entire life gets cut in half, you're not going to retire when you want to.
Right.
You're going to be working a lot longer. And we sat down and looked at their portfolio. And they have so much more risk in their portfolio that they even had a clue that they did. I don't think they slept well last night.
Are they sleeping better now?
We're going to see them again next week.
Now, the jobless number is coming out tomorrow. And right. I think you and I have different views of the because we're almost at full employment.
But not really. Not really. When you look at people who are underemployed, we're talking about this before the show. The vice president at IBM that loses his job and gets a job at McDonald's flipping burgers, he's not considered unemployed. The college student who cannot find a job anywhere and has gone back to get another degree just to have something to do with his life is not considered unemployed. There's more people who have dropped out of the labor force than there has been in the history of this country for at least the last 50 or 60 years.
Okay, but isn't part of that, too, because so many people are dropping out of the labor force because they're coming to see you and they're retiring? I mean, the population's getting older.
No. It's dwarfing that. The real unemployment in this country is over 10%.
All right, so what do people do?
Well, you can probably tell from the tone of my voice I'm concerned about this.
I was having such a good day, Bill.
But you know what? If I'm wrong and things are so much better, who gets hurt?
Right.
But if I'm right and you're close to retirement and you lose half of what you have, it's going to change your life.
Right.
Steve, I know you're going to talk about this in a moment. I'm so concerned about this that I'm going to sit down with people personally and run through and help them with financial plans for their retirement and to really understand what their risk is. I can't do this for everybody, but I know you're going to talk about the next five callers to call in.
Yeah.
I'll sit down with them personally and help them work through this.
All right, Bill Geiger, thanks very much for coming in today.
You're welcome, sir.
It's good to see you. And, I guess if you're right, I hope we're prepared. We'll do that. Nothing can be more frustrating than working, as Bill said, your entire life, saving as much as possible for retirement, and then having no idea how you're going to make your nest egg last 20 or 30 years more. That's where Bill Geiger, Chicago's retirement planning expert, comes in. Now, Bill joins us every Thursday and would like to make this very special offer to you, a full-blown financial plan, a $3,000 value, absolutely free, no obligation to the first five callers who have at least $500,000 saved for retirement. And, Bill, you said you're going to do this personally, right?
I'm going to work with them personally.
Just call 800-681-2498. That's 800-681-2498. You deserve the security and independence of knowing that you're doing the right thing with your retirement nest egg. Be one of the first five callers for your complimentary, no-obligation, full-blown financial plan. You've earned it. Now it's time for your money to start working for you. Call Geiger Wealth Management today at 800-681-2498. Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Elise Glink is the co-host of Monday Morning Marketing. It's a podcast you can listen to and pick up at WGNplus.com. She joins us on a phone line now. Elise, welcome back to the program.
Hey, it's nice to be here, Steve. How are you doing today?
I'm great, thank you. And I was saying before the break, you know, I love talking to you because marketing is one of those things that I don't understand, but you know, there's so much for me to learn, and when I get ready to talk to you, there are so many things that I pick up. And so you've got me thinking today, you know, obviously we're in revolutionary times when it comes to technology and all of that. And you know, 20, 30 years ago, if you were going to advertise your product, you would do it on the radio or in a newspaper, magazine, things like that. Now it's all digital, which is great. But the thing is, the digital technology and the digital avenues seem like they're changing almost every other day, and it's got to be almost impossible for people to keep up.
I think it's impossible to keep up even with the nonprofit trade associations that are springing up almost every day to deal with these sorts of things, so for sure.
And is this the sort of thing that most companies are now hiring advisors to deal with, or are people still trying to do it on their own?
I think that companies, big companies, are of course hiring sometimes several different vendors to help them deal with it. You might get a specialist in SEO and another one in digital marketing and another one who's just going to do your purchases for you, pay-per-click, as John and I talk about on Monday Morning Marketing all the time. You know, there are so many different types of ways to approach these markets, and yet there is so much new to learn. You could really spend all of your time just going to conferences that are dealing with digital marketing and never run your business.
Yeah,
so you really
have
to find the balance.
I'm picturing a guy or a woman sort of standing on top of a ball and you know, running in place and never really getting ahead, just trying to keep up. Tell me about location-based marketing, because it's one of those things I deal with all the time, but I didn't know the phrase until I started reading up a little bit today.
Yeah, I was amazed that there's actually a location-based marketing nonprofit trade association.
Well, of course there is.
Of course there is, and their whole point is to deal with this sort of stuff. So location-based marketing is obviously something new, right? It had to do with the ability of our smartphones to tag us on location, where we are, and then give retailers and other sorts of companies the ability to throw marketing ads at us based on where we're actually located. So you saw this happening with some of the, I mean, I'm trying to think of the name of it, but there were a whole bunch of different apps a few years ago. And what they did was when you went into somewhere, like with Facebook, you would check in at a location, and then you would suddenly magically see ads from that location or businesses that were nearby. And that's really the essence of location-based marketing. It's the idea that if you're somewhere, like a gas station or at a certain Starbucks, that you would be more open to getting an ad or a discount or a coupon or some two-for-one thing from that location. And so tagging you allows marketers to serve up what they think are more relevant ads.
All right, let me ask you something that might be a bit different, but maybe it's not. I get up every morning, go to the health club. It's the Midtown Health Club in Bannockburn.
Mm-hmm.
And when I'm there, I listen to Pandora all the time. Pandora still has ads on it, and one of the ads I get when I'm there is for the Midtown Athletic Club. Now, I'm assuming that people who are listening to Pandora in Wauwatosa, Wisconsin, aren't getting that ad. I'm getting that ad probably because of where I'm standing. Not that I'm in that club, but that I'm in the neighborhood of that club.
That's right, and that's a perfect example of what you might see. You also might see from Waze, you know, which is the app that shows you how to drive around faster than Google Maps,
right?
Waze. So Waze also has been building in location-based marketing, and you, if you're driving by a Buffalo Wild Wings or a Starbucks, you might get a little ping that's offering you some sort of a two-for-one or a discount. At the Container Store, you can now use location-based marketing to pre-order, and then as you drive up, supposedly they come out with your stuff so that you're spending less time kind of waiting or parking and going into the store and actually finding somebody who can get your stuff for you, which is all terrific.
All right, so let's say I'm running a deli in Libertyville, and I want to use this location-based marketing, and I want to be on Pandora. I want to be on Waze that you were talking about. I want to be on the GPS and people driving by. Is there one place I go to, or as a business owner, am I forced to hunt each of these sort of apps and possibilities down individually?
I, I'm sure there's some one. Well, I don't think there's one way to do it all anymore. I think there might be like the old double click. There might be places to buy keywords, and now you can buy locations the way that you used to be able to buy keywords. So there probably is an app out there that I don't know about. So everybody, if you do know of some apps, you can send them to me on Twitter at Glink, and I'll take a look and we'll talk about it next week or on Monday Morning Marketing. But there are ways to go into Pandora and to buy ads through them, and they, of course, like that because they get all the money. So there are probably some, and I haven't bought ads through Pandora for anybody. We typically, that's not the kind of shop that we are. We don't do pay-per-click.
Right.
But when you buy direct, they love it because they get more of the money, of course. So there are usually incentives to go ahead and do that. Look, Facebook is really, you know, becoming known for location-based marketing. Twitter is trying to get in the game. Instagram, all of the big ones are really sort of making an effort here.
And it sort of goes back to where I started in, because in the olden days of the 1980s, you might have had four or five or six different entities that you could go to market your product. And now, I mean, in addition to radio and TV and magazines and newspapers, each of these individual little teeny tiny operations, this goes back to what we talked to, I don't know if it was last week or a couple of weeks ago, about, you know, marketing in the dark or like a shot in the dark. It's got to be hard to know where to put your money.
I think it's impossible to know. When I think about where it's going, I know about some different technologies that aren't really ready for primetime yet, but I've talked to some of the inventors and the engineers. And location-based marketing is going to be making some really interesting strides over the next year or two. Imagine coupling location-based marketing with self-driving cars and trucks. So you're Google and you're building a self-driving car, which, by the way, are coming, right, any moment now.
Before I know it, I pulled into a Starbucks with no intention.
That's right. Or, you know, where you are, the Google car comes driving up to you with something that you've ordered from Amazon,
wow,
right? That was and it knows where you are. So even if you move around, the car can track you and follow you and then deliver the whatever it is you've ordered directly to wherever you're going to be. And it frees us up, this location-based marketing, from having to be in one place, just the way that cell phones freed us up from our landlines.
All right, let me talk about it from a different direction as a marketee. And when I'm downloading a new app or following something, you know, they will ask about notifications. And, you know, I'm usually pretty quick to say, no, I don't want notifications. If I say yes, one of the things I'm sensitive to is being over-notified. And I would imagine that's something with location-based marketing. You want to get out to your customers, but you don't want to beat them too hard or you're going to end up turning them off.
I think it's a danger for any kind of marketing, right? Nobody wants to be hit over the head. You know, one of the things John and I have talked about in our podcast that drives us crazy is if you go to a website, let's say I'm at, Neiman Marcus, and I'm looking online at the, sale items, and then I go somewhere else, and all I see for the next,
right,
you know, 6 years are Neiman Marcus sale items and maybe a dress I looked at or a pair of shoes that I decided not to buy, which is why I didn't buy it. And then those shoes follow me for the next week and a half.
And it makes you angry.
Well, I'm certainly not going to buy them, or I would have bought them the first time I looked at them. So it's interesting how the technology is kind of out there, but maybe the algorithms that understand what we're feeling aren't quite there. So I'm not sure how you get around that, but as a marketer, you got to be aware that people like, you know, Steve and me are just very sensitive to being overpushed.
That's an interesting way to put at it. That I would imagine they are working on algorithms now that will be able to figure out not only where we are, but how we feel about where we are.
Well, maybe it'll have something in, like, say, Apple, getting them in the mix, right? And on our little Apple laptops, when we're tapping angrily because we don't want to see those ads anymore, it'll pick that up, and then we won't see them, maybe.
Elise Glink is the co-host of Monday Morning Marketing. You can listen to it at WGNplus.com. Great to talk to you, Elise. Thanks for joining us.
Anytime, Steve.
You're listening to The Business Lunch on 720 WGN. It's 12:51. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. My name's Steve Bertrand. I hope you'll follow me on Twitter at Steve Bertrand, or friend me on Facebook at Steve Bertrand, or Steve Bertrand on books, all kinds of locations. All right, so I wrote an article for a column for the Tribune. It's maybe been 10 or 15 years ago, but it had to do with the fact that women are always looking for a reason to get together. I just moved to the suburbs, you know, and it's a whether it's a makeup party or a jewelry party, or now they're coloring parties, women are much more social. They get together in groups and talk about things. Well, take that and then take sort of financial knowledge or wherewithal, and couple those, and you've got a cocktail that Barbara Provost is serving up. She joins us now on a phone line to talk about purse strings. Barbara, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
I'm not sure cocktail's the right thing, but I mean, that's sort of what we're talking about, isn't it? I like this idea of women getting together and learning about finance in a very comfortable way.
That's right. What we do at Purse Strings is we encourage women to get together in small groups, and we arm them with the information and skills they need to make the best financial choices for themselves and their family, and we just attack one financial topic at a time. So we might start out with cash flow or budgeting, things like that.
Now, you also operate under the assumption that women have a certain ignorance when it comes to this generally, and I don't know if I want to challenge that. I'm not sure that's in my house. You know, maybe I look at the long-term agenda more than my wife does. She's more short-term, but I don't know if that's typical. But you think that this is an area where, in general, women might be lacking.
Well, it's true. And just like you said, many women are really concerned about their day-to-day operations of their household, getting their bills paid, but not really looking at the long-term retirement needs that they have. Sometimes they give that to a spouse to take care of, or sometimes they might have a financial planner. But the reality is that women are going to find themselves in situations where they're really going to have to take responsibility for all of their financial decision-making. At some point, 95% of women will be responsible for their financial decisions.
Right. What you're saying is women live longer.
Absolutely. Women live longer. And when we live longer during that time, we really have to take care of, make sure we have enough retirement funds for during that time, and also health benefits and money to cover our health at that time.
All right, so there's the problem, and the solution is purse strings. How does it work?
So the way purse strings works is that we gather women in small groups, like you said, they like to join together. We teach them one topic at a time, 90-minute sessions, and we really unpack those sessions. We talk about budgeting. We talk about the cash flow in your household. We talk about auto insurance and homeowners insurance, which, although not really that sexy of a topic, we always say, you know, a woman who's in control of her finance and is really the one that is going to be in control and will have enough money for their financial future. And insurance is a bill that you pay your whole life, so they really need to understand their coverages.
All right, but Barbara, explain this for me. Is this, I mean, you know, I started with the analogy of the house, the Tupperware party. Is it thrown like a woman might contract with you and then call 10 of her friends to come over to the house to hear this? Or how do women, how do you find your crowd?
We can certainly do that. We're prepared to have these small sessions in women's homes. But also, we know women are busy, so we want to meet them where they are. So we're looking to large organizations who might want to bring in purse strings as a very inexpensive benefit that they can offer their female employees. Right now, we're in some large organizations. We're in a small business organization, the Goddard School. We're in a dentist office. So some of these smaller businesses that want to offer this benefit for their female employees, we can come right on site. So it's not another to-do for women. We can meet them at work. We're also going to be in the libraries. We're going to be in the community centers or right in a woman's home.
So you would do this in a workplace where there might be men and women, and the employer would do it for the women but not the men?
Well, we're doing it focusing on women because women's needs are quite different than men when it comes to retirement. Like you said, we live longer. We're out of the workforce, maybe caring for children or caring for a sick relative. We're not making dollar for dollar for as men are these days, so our needs are quite different.
Okay, but if you're selling, but if you're pitching me and I'm a business owner and you want to say, you know, you're going to come in and talk to the women in my office, I would imagine they might be reluctant if the men aren't included. So how do you get around that with the person you're contracting with?
Well, we wouldn't turn anybody away from learning, right? Learning is great, and the financial information is going to be a wealth of information for men or women. It's geared for women, but we welcome all.
Well, I love the idea. I think it's a pretty cool idea, and I love the sort of marriage with the small women gathering. My wife was at a party last night with women doing certain things, so I think it's a perfect idea. How do people find out more information and sort of get involved with you?
They can go right to our site. Women can join Purse Strings for free at www.pursestrings.co. It's not com, it's .co.
All right. And, well, thank you very much for joining us. I appreciate it today, Barbara.
Thank you for having me.
That's Barbara Provorst, the founder of Purse Strings. You interested? Check her out on the web.